There are some unique stresses connected with the ministry that are connected with no other profession. And there are times that we prove our leadership best by performance under those stresses. This came home to me in a fresh way when I read Gordon MacDonald's book, The Effective Father, in which he included this tragic account. When George Jagger took his three sons and an elderly grandfather out on the Atlantic Ocean for a fishing trip, he had no premonition of the horror that he would face in a matter of hours. Before he would step on shore again, Jagger would watch each son and then his father die, victims of exhaustion and lungs filled with water. The boat's engine had stalled in the late afternoon. While increasing winds whipped the sea into great waves, the boat rolled helpless in the water and then began to list dangerously. When it became apparent that they were sinking, the five Jagger men put on the life vests, grim-faced, tied themselves together with a rope, and slipped into the water. It was 6:30 in the evening when the sinking craft disappeared and the swimmers set out to work their way toward shore. 6-foot waves and a strong current made the swimming almost impossible. First one boy and then another and another swallowed too much salt water. Helpless, George Jagger watched his sons one by one and then his father die. 8 hours later, he staggered onto the shore, still pulling the rope that bound the bodies of the other four to him. I realized that they were all dead, my three boys and my father, and I guess I didn't want to accept it, so I kept swimming all night long, he later reported. My youngest boy, Clifford, was the first to go. I had always taught our children not to fear death because it was being with Jesus Christ. Before he died, I heard him say, "I'd rather be with Jesus than go on fighting." And then MacDonald adds, "Performance under stress is one test of effective leadership." The beautiful way the boys died said something about the kind of father George Jagger had been for 15 years. That one statement in the account hangs in my head often as a father and as a minister. Performance under stress. Performance under stress is one of the ways we prove how effective our leadership is. The ministry has unique stresses, and I would like to suggest three of them as we begin again the account of Moses' life, turning to Exodus chapter 3. The three that I want to suggest are not actually found in these first 10 or 11 verses that we'll be looking at, but they are seen in the early life of Moses. Here's the first one. I would like for you to write them down so you'll remember them. Intensity is the first stress. It reveals itself when we run before we are sent. Moses has done that. There is an intensity in men in the ministry that characterizes itself by running before we are sent. Instead of waiting, trusting, allowing God to open the doors just when they need to be opened, in great intensity, we push them open. We burst through and we blunder. And we later live to hate it. Intensity is one area. The second, insecurity. Insecurity occurs when we retreat after we have failed. Moses has done that. Retreating after failing is a very common experience for all people, but I think especially for those of us who want to model the message. We have a hard time living with failure, and our tendency is to retreat and to feel inadequate, insecure. The third is inferiority, resisting when we are called. And that's what we find Moses doing in the third and fourth chapters of Exodus. Running before we are sent, retreating after we have failed, and resisting when we are called. When God gives a new dream, a new direction, His plan clearly set forth, we tend, because of this inferiority, this inadequacy, and lessons that we had not learned in our intensity, we tend to resist. I wish I could say you outgrow those problems. I wish I could say that as you get older, you overcome each one, one by one, and then you can live above it. But I think, frankly, the older we get, the more prevalent are the three. Especially this whole problem of intensity. Now, the Exhibit A in God's plan for us is this 80-year-old Bedouin shepherd whose skin is now dark and leathery from 40 years under the sun on the Sinai Peninsula. He has been living with, talking to, sounding like, perhaps, the sheep that he has been leading. He has been punching the clock for his father-in-law for these 40 years. And there begins a new day like every other day in these four decades of his life. No landslide, no bugle call, no thunderclap, no lightning, no skywriting, no unique cloud formations, just another day. You see, Moses has never read Exodus 3, so he does not know what's ahead of him, and he just begins the day like any other day in his life. We read, he was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness, maybe to seek some shade, maybe to find a clump of grass for his flock. We're not told why. He just went to the west side, and he came to Horeb, another name for Sinai, this 7,600-foot-high mountain. Impressive. Awesome in his sight, but he had seen it so often, it was just another mountain. He came to Horeb, the mountain of God, and there, for the first time in 40 years, something new happened. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush. The Hebrew says, a thorny shrub. It was probably in the acacia family, and there are hundreds of thousands such bushes in that wilderness. The fact that the bush burned was not unique, but the fact that it was not consumed by the fire was unique. It was an inextinguishable flame. That's what made it unique. For bushes to burst into fire, I am told, is not that uncommon, but for a bush to continue to burn without being consumed is altogether unique, and it attracted his attention. Before I go any further, there are a couple of things that ought to be said about this business of God's leading. First, it often occurs, even his great plan for us for some change in direction, on common garden variety, everyday kind of days. Don't wait for some unique voice, some vision. There's a lady out in California who was making tacos one day, and she found a face of Jesus in one of the tortillas, if you can believe it. And as a result, they have some kind of shrine set up around this face of Jesus in a tortilla. You would not believe the people that stand in line to see the tortilla face of Jesus. Christ is not revealing himself in tortillas and tacos. He does not show himself in some incredible voice like that. He reveals himself in the normal manner of everyday life as we are sensitive to him. And the second thing to notice, when it's from him, it is inextinguishable. It won't go away. It stays. It persists. You can't forget it. You will have calls while you are engaged in ministry. All sorts of voices will come. This one giving you this confirmation, this one affirming that, and they will pass away. But when they stay, when they persist, when they dog your steps, when you can't forget them, those are the things worth considering. This bush would not consume. It kept burning, and it attracted Moses' attention. Now, this was not God's message. This was God's flare. This was his flag to get Moses' attention. The bush was insignificant, only that it made Moses stop and look. It says that Moses, verse 3, said, of course, to himself, I must turn aside now. I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. And Moses has no idea that God is in the bush. I am convinced in my mind that Moses, if he was a man anything like any of us, felt God had written him off. He had failed, remember? He has a criminal record in Egypt. He in the flesh murdered a man, and he felt that because of that failure, he was finished. He had retreated, and he felt this woeful sense of inadequacy that God would ever speak again, and he simply wanted to know why the bush didn't burn up. Sheer curiosity caused him to turn aside. I think the when of verse 4 is significant. God did not speak until Moses stopped to listen. Flares go off in our lives, and they continue to go off, and God waits until we stop to speak. Moses took the time to listen. My oldest son and I were in a little Hallmark gift store some time ago, and while we were there, we were thumbing through. I began to thumb through some of these large posters. You've seen them, the big, beautiful, colorful posters, and sometimes there is a word or two at the bottom that just seems to set it in its right setting, and I found my favorite one. And I called Kurt over, and he came and stood by me, and I said, look at that. And he said, boy, that is great. It was the picture of a placid lake. A father and his son were sitting in a skiff, a little boat, out in the middle of the lake. It apparently was either early in the morning or late in the evening. The sun was just down behind the horizon, and there had a couple of fishing lines in the water. And at the bottom, two words. Take time. That's what God asks of his men and his women. Take time. When the flare comes and when you sense that it is not going away, take time. Even though it is the farthest thing from your imagination that it might be the voice of God, take time. When he turned aside and looked, God called to him from the midst of the bush. Now, I am so impressed with the simplicity of this dialogue. We have made it, we have really embellished it. Centuries of preaching will make something very simple, very complicated, and extremely puzzling and profound. But out of this bush came two words, one name, Moses, Moses. And if you read in the Hebrew Moses' response, it is simply the word, Hineni. Sort of like when Alex Haley gave us Roots and Kunta Kinte was learning to speak, his first word, grits, that type thing. Moses is standing there and he hears this bush. Moses, Moses, Hineni. You've been following sheep for 40 years, baby. Your vocabulary is very, very limited. Lo, me, that's what he says. Lo, me. He doesn't know who it is. That bush is talking. Hineni. I think 40 years before he would have said, oh, you finally noticed. Now, here's my resume. Majored in hieroglyphics, 6 years experience as associate pharaoh. Flawless track record, Medal of Honor, Battle of Ethiopia. Where have you been? But 40 years later, Hineni. Lo, me. Key simple, guys. Keep it simple. Don't make it slick. Keep it simple. Christianity Today came out with a rather interesting satire called A Meeting of the Board some time ago. Maybe you read it. It's a modern-day upper room scene where Jesus is with his men. And I thought it was hilarious, frankly, and I pass it on to you. Instead of the normal things on the table, there's a cup of coffee and a little pot over there steaming, and Pete speaks first. This meeting has been called at the request of Matt, John, Tom, and little Jim. Bart, will you please open with prayer? Bart. Almighty God, we ask your blessing on all we do and say, and earnestly pray you will see our side as your side. Amen. Pete. Jesus, we've been following you around for some time. We're getting concerned about the attendance figures. Tom, how many were on a hill yesterday? Tom, 37. This is getting to be ridiculous, Pete. You're going to have to pep things up. We expect things to happen. John, I'd like to suggest you pull off more miracles. That walking on water bit was the most exciting thing I've ever seen, but only a few of us got to see it. Now, if 1,000 or more had a chance to witness it, we would have more than we could handle on the hill. Little Jim, I agree. The healing miracles are terrific, but only a limited number really get to see what has happened. Let's have more water to wine, more fish and chips. It never hurts to fill their stomachs. Still more storms. Give more signs. That's what the people need. Pete, right on. And another thing, publicity is essential. And you tell half the people you cure to keep it quiet. Let the word out. Matt, now I'm all for miracles, but I want to hear a few stories that I can understand. This, quote, those who have ears to hear, let them hear, business clouds the issue. Have to make it clear, or most of us aren't going to be able to take anything home. Big Jim, I'd like to make an order of service. Here's my offer. First a story, then a big miracle, followed by an offering, then maybe a saying or something, followed by a small miracle to bring them back next time. Oh, yeah, you can pray if you like. Tom, we got to do something. Little Jim, that's for sure. Attendance has been awful. Judas, I'd like to say if we're going to continue meeting in this upper room, we got to do something about the carpet. A slick business. That's many a ministry in today's world. We got to get it together. We got to make it interesting and attractive. And we got to get a show going. And we got to have stages that come up and go down and lights. I mean, it's got to be a show. Hanani will never cut it. Me. Oh, me. That's all God asks. Lo, that's me. Well, when God heard him speak, he said, do not come near here. Isn't it interesting that he doesn't sign a contract with Moses? He doesn't plan out the whole event. He immediately reveals his character. God always does that. Wait a minute, Moses. Don't you come another step further. Don't you come near. The place on which you're standing is Kadesh. It's holy. Not the bush. Of course the bush is holy. God's in it. But the place where you're standing is holy. Take your shoes off. Why? Well, I hope it doesn't press the text to say this. I believe, honestly, he wanted nothing at all between that holy presence and Moses himself, not even a slab of leather. Just separate yourself totally from time, from your past, from your opinion, from your estimation, from everything that is human. Take it off. Stand barefoot. And Moses immediately was forced to lose his own orientation and his own memory of failure. And he slumped over to loosen his thongs on his sandals. And for the first time, God tells him who he is. Up till now, he hasn't identified himself. He says, I am the God of your father. I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Wow. That's the last voice Moses ever expected to hear. He is unworthy. And he was naturally afraid. I think more visions, more dreams are lost because of those old shepherd sandals than the law allows. Continually reminding ourselves of failure or inability or inferiority or some mistake, some blunder, some bad decision, and the old ghosts are there to haunt us, saying, you can't do that. They're not interested in that. Leave that to somebody else. And God is saying, take off those sandals. Stand barefoot on me. Listen to me as if for the very first time. Men, don't limit God in what he could do through you. All sorts of voices will come to say, don't pay any attention to that. That's out of the question. You don't have that kind of training. You don't have that kind of ability. Look at what you did, and then it'll name the date and the time. Take off your shoes. That's all God says. I remember the battle that I went through as an adolescent. One of my major battles as a young man was speaking without stuttering. I stuttered so badly in high school that I wondered if I'd ever know the joy of finishing a sentence, you know, without blowing it. And an unsaved drama teacher in the high school saw potential in me, and not in my ability at that time, but in my person. And he said, why don't you go out for drama? Why don't you go out for public speaking? Well, that's beautiful. It's like asking a cripple to run a race. What do you mean? I said, what do you mean, me? He said, I'll tell you how to do it. And I didn't know it then, but what he did during the summer and then that senior year in high school was carry out speech therapy. I discovered that my head was running away with my mouth. I have the opposite problem now that I have dealt with the issue. But my stuttering. And let me ask you something. Did that guy make an investment in my life? Unsaved Jewish speech teacher. Out of the clear blue. And maybe some similar struggle you have gone through. And God says, I can use that. I can use you. And your tendency is to go back on that failure, that disability. And God says, listen to me. I am the God of Abraham, imperfect. The God of Isaac, imperfect. The God of Jacob, imperfect in spades. And Moses hid his face. He was afraid to look at God. I was on my way to Palm Springs several years ago, and I saw on the back of a big camper a huge bumper sticker. I'll never forget it. It read, God is back, and boy, is he mad. I think that's probably what Moses thought at that moment. God's back, and boy, is he mad. No wonder he was afraid. God never left. Look at the next verse. The Lord said, I have seen, I am aware, I know what's going on, man. Verse 7, I've seen the affliction of my people. I've given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters. I am aware of their sufferings. I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians. And if you don't think God is with it, read on. To the land that's flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, the Termite, all of them. I know every one of them. And God says, Moses, I'm in touch and I can handle it. And Moses by now is thinking, that's right. That's what's going on. Never dreams what God is going to say. Sometimes the Lord lays on us some tremendous need and we're aware of it. Yeah, that's right. Incredible. Amazing. Yeah, something's got to be done about that. Look at it. Or say, yeah, I see it. I see it. Now then, you go. You know, right down deep. Moses, he's not ready for that. come now, I'll send you. I'll send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people out of Egypt. That's the biggest jolt of all. You know Moses' response. Who am I? Remember me? I'm a murderer. I'm the failure. I'm the loser. Remember me? I can't cut it under stress. And God, I am sure, comes back, as we will see next time, in answering each one of these arguments. God comes back and says, why in the world do you think I set that acacia bush on fire? And I could have brought an angel down here, and I could have had him dance and display my splendor, and you would have been all impressed. I used a little bush. Ian Thomas is right. Any old bush will do as long as God is in the bush. I can use you, Moses. But the point is, you cannot make it alone, and that's what Moses had in mind. Who am I that I should go? And God says, you got me. I'm there. In times of deepest stress, God's presence is most vivid. Ask Adam Fremont, whose beloved wife, Becky, after only 4 hours of illness, passed from his arms into the Lord's. He was left with the crushing blow of raising a young daughter and putting it all back together now that the light of his life had gone out. The scene is captured by a friend who follows him home that night. So Adam went back to his hollow house with his little flaxen-haired daughter. He moved Carrie's bed next to his for the night. It was a moonless, starless night. Dark, cold, and black. And as heavy as the grief that smothered him, his eyes stung and his breath was crushed. Carrie's sobs brought him back from the abyss that threatened. Pathetic, heartbreaking cries such as come from the lips of a little girl who suddenly knows her mother will never come back. Adam reached across with his big hand and patted her, speaking softly, trying to comfort her. I'm trying to stop. I really am, she choked, but I can't. He lifted her over to his bed, put her damp face against his chest. She lay there several minutes until her heaving sobs subsided. Daddy, Daddy, it's so dark. I can't see you. Do you love me, Daddy? Even though I can't see you. Yeah, sweetheart. You know I love you. He spoke softly and gently until she fell asleep. Sleep eluded Adam. His burning eyes searched through the blackness for a hint of light. He found none. So unutterably alone. He took the cry from his girl's lips to his own and passed it to the Lord. It's so dark, God. I've never known it to be so dark before. Lord, do you still love me, even though I cannot see you? I need your help. I cannot make it alone. The wonder of God's reply still hangs in his head. As he said the next day to his friend, there came a warmth of fire into the room that night. Now, I saw nothing, but I felt a loving presence. And right there, I turned my grief over to the Lord, and he took my burden, and I went free. My load passed from my heart to his, and he carried it for me. There is no stress so great, but that he is not greater still. our Father and our God, how can it be that you, in love, should have your Son die for me? In all of the heady and demanding assignments at this place, there are hearts that are breaking and, in fact, broken under the grief of the threat of a separation in the home or the horror of failure. The deep impasse, the fear of the future. God, Almighty God, we need a bush. Something gentle, irrepressible, indistinguishable, that will continue to reveal your plan, your presence. We rely on you to do this, our Father, even as you did to Moses, even in our stress.